Business Class is brought to you by the Tourism Academy, harnessing the power of science, business psychology, and adult education to advance the tourism industry and build sustainable economies. Learn how to engage your community, win over stakeholders, and get more visitors at tourismacademy.org.
All right, Steve Ekstrom here. Today's guest, Maura Gast, Executive Director of the Irving Convention and Visitors Bureau. Welcome to Business Class.
Thank you, sir. Nice to fly up front.
Isn't it always nice to be the first one off the plane too?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I've got to ask, if he's a 10, but he claps when the plane lands, what does he become?
The 10 and he claps. This is going to be a really bad joke.
No, that's it.
If he's a 10 and he claps when the plane lands, what is
does he instantly become a 3 or a 4?
Oh, I was like trying to think if there was a number related pun. That's where brain went.
No trick questions like that.
I think it depends on how bumpy the flight was.
This is true.
Either conversationally or technically.
And it also depends on where you land.
Also true. Runway yes. Important.
There are some destinations when you land, you know, people are so excited to be home or to be, you know,
there,
to be there that they applaud. When did
almost
you...
every flight landing in Vegas or Orlando, right?
The Caribbean.
Yeah, that too. Any beach.
Yeah. When did you realize that Irving was home?
Oh, goodness gracious. I have been here a really long time. So 31 and a half years. And I lived here before I came to work here. I lived in Irving. I was living in Irving actually when I came to work here. Probably I've had opportunities over the years to go other places, to and move on to bigger opportunities or more money or wherever. And there came a point where you just start to really think about what you have that's intangible, that's really, really hard to replace. And the older I have gotten, the more I realize that the energy and passion and everything it would take to start over somewhere else and do it the way I think it has to be done, I think is really, really hard to do. So I think it's in understanding that, you know, what we've been able to build here literally and figuratively couldn't happen in many other places. And I shouldn't look that gift horse in the mouth.
So what is something that you see when you're out and about in the community that didn't exist when you started that you're really proud of?
I mean, the certainly the most physical thing or the most literal thing is the 40-acre convention/entertainment district we built. So it started with the convention center. We added the entertainment component. And then the last piece was the headquarter hotel. And it took 12 years to get the convention center done. And then ultimately about 12 years to get the entertainment piece added. And adding the hotel, and even though that feels like a marathon, considering other destinations that have tried to do this for 40 or 50 or 60 years, you know, I'm very proud of what we were able to do. And that was a team effort, and it was a community effort. It was us, and it was the chamber, and it was economic development, and it was our corporate residents, and it was series of boards and series of elected and appointed officials, and it was a lot of roadblocks and a lot of politics, but we were able to make it happen. And having it happen is one thing. Having it be successful is far more important. And barring COVID, if we ever could, it has been, it raised the bar. We have raised our weekend occupancies over the past 12 years, which was one of the key things we had to do. We didn't have any thing driving weekend demand. We needed that. We needed that supplemental, the incremental piece of business that we just couldn't get any other way when you're primarily a corporate travel destination.
Right. Do you think your longevity with the organization has. Let me think of a different way to ask that question. Do you think more executives and CEOs would be better served if they had longer lengths of stay with their organizations?
You know, that is a great question. And while I think on the surface the answer is yes, I mean, it's every situation is unique and every community has its own dynamic. And, you know, it's sort of unique to our roles, but it's not, because you see this in chambers and you see this in some other types of nonprofits that, you know, every 7 years or so, there's, you know, it's the 7 year itch. There's People can wear out their welcomes. People can get complacent. And depending on where you are in your life or career, when things happen, you know, are you at a point in your career where you're trying to move up a ladder, or are you at a point in your career where you're trying to hold steady, or are you at a point of your career where you're thinking about minimizing the chaos or minimizing the disruption? And that could also mean a move. So I don't know. You know, I am constantly doing this, you know, waiting for the day, because it just often happens. I mean, the longer you've been in a place, certainly the longer you've had the ability to build up trust and therefore support, or to earn trust and support. But that also gives you more time to, you know, potentially spurn folks. People you've had to say no to, or chosen to say no to, or whatever over the years. You know, I have tried really hard to learn from all the good and bad that my colleagues and my predecessors were part of, and to try to, you know, be thoughtful about what happened, what, you know, what went right, but what went wrong, and what were the warning signs maybe that we missed. You know, because even with my predecessors, who I learned a lot from, in the moments you don't always recognize the warning signs, or you get by. You know, the first go round of trying to get the convention center built, we had spent, I bet, close to $17 million, including land, but also engineering studies and some additional stuff, when that version of the project got killed. And I was Pollyanna enough still at that point in time to say, listen, as long as we have 5 of the 9 votes, as long as we have 6 of the 9 votes every time, we're going to get this done, without really understanding that 8 became 7, became 6, became 5, you know, and that it was a matter of time before it was going to get killed. And it did. So I don't know. You know, I think there's an advantage. You know, I always worry. It's one of the many reasons I've plugged in so deep and so hard to now DI over the years, is just I've been here so long. I only, you know, our team, a lot of our team has been here a really long time. I worry that we only know our way of doing things. So I want to make sure that I'm constantly, you know, borrowing, begging, stealing from my colleagues in places big and small, to do things differently or better, that we just don't say this is the only way to do it, because it's not. You know, for the most part, it's worked, and it's worked here in Irving. That also doesn't mean it's immediately replicable, plop it down anywhere else. It's worked because that's what's worked in Irving. Some of the basics probably work somewhere else. I don't know that they work everywhere else.
There's a line that we frequently use, or I frequently use, in saying that there's only so much knowledge in the room. And, you know, being curious creatures and being that we have that in common with the travelers that we look to serve, I think it's important that we continue learning. What's a skill that you would like to learn, maybe not related to work, that you haven't mastered yet?
Okay, well, it's definitely not related, theoretically not related to work. But it is something. So, only a handful of people know this. I'm hesitant with your
Uh-oh,
platform to say this next
we're gonna
part.
find out.
Now, About a year and a half ago, I was at a conference, saw some folks I had not seen in a long time, and got asked a question I was stumped to answer, which was, "What are you doing for fun for yourself?" I was like, "Man," and I thought on that and thought on that and thought, you know, that's really bad. I have been, even though I know it's not right, I have been mostly living to work, and working to take care of a lot of other things that are happening in my world. And I was like, okay, I need a hobby, you know, and taking care of the yard and pulling weeds is not a hobby, and cleaning the pool is not a hobby. And while reading is a hobby, and I've always loved to read, you know, I have as many unread professional development related books as I have unread books of fiction, right? And even more now that Kindle and Libby make it so easy to access more things I'm not going to get around to reading. And catching up on Psych or NCIS from season one through fruition is probably not a hobby as well, even though it's enjoyable. So after kind of noodling, and I said, okay, I want to do something that's not going to take tons of my time, that I can fit in, that I am not going to invest in equipment or tools or gear that if this is a short-lived thing, I just want to invest in me. And so once a week for the last year now, I have taken a voice lesson on Saturday mornings. I love to sing. I'm not bad at it. I ran a karaoke business many years ago, but I was good at the karaoke business. My husband and I did. We were good at it because we weren't great singers. We didn't intimidate other people into coming onto the stage, right? So I was just like, you know what? I had a voice class in college. I don't read music. I don't want to go on America's Got Talent. I don't want to do anything other than do this for me. And so I asked around the neighborhood. I Googled. I found a place. I am not the oldest student there, but I am probably one of the two oldest students there because we're here in the burbs, and there's lots of kids, you know, in piano and guitar and ukulele and painting. It's a great facility. But anyway, so that's been my, I'm doing it really for me. I would say over the 31 years, there's been a handful of times where I have been thrust onto a stage, sometimes with some preparation, sometimes with none, to sing. One year for a trials, the person who was supposed to show up to do the national anthem did not, and this nobody had a recorded version of it. This is pre-cell phones, so somehow or another, I got roped into that. That's the most intimidating song in the universe to ever attempt to sing. We hosted the Texas Society of Association Executives here at the Convention Center the first or second year we were open, and my staff really wanted me to get up and sing something, so I did Rosemary Clooney's "Come Out of My House," which wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. So every once in a while, those things have popped up, but I really just wanted to do it for me. And initially, I was a little intimidated because the instructors I've been working with are wonderfully talented, and you know they you know try this and it's legato and it's I was like, I have no idea what you're saying to me. Please use real words. Here's some songs I like. And then I was stressing because I don't really get my lone window to practice is kind of in the car because by the time I get to the office, other people are here. I don't want them to hear. Nobody here at the office knows I'm doing this. Because I don't want anybody to put me to think, oh, good, she's better at it now. We can use her.
Do it
And they
again.
won't. They know better. But I really want this to be just for me. And that's what I've said. I don't, you know, I don't want to sing in the church choir. I just want to get better at singing some songs that I really like, most of which are really old, 40s Rat Pack-ish kind of stuff. That's really where I'm more comfortable. That's been a skill I have been working on. I'm sure there is a litany of other things I could be working on. I would like to be much better at Excel. I hate Excel. But that's a very work-related skill.
That
Other
is.
than
Well,
tax time, I don't see the value of that to me in my work life. And thankfully, we have a great accounting team here, so I don't need to know Excel.
I have a personal karaoke trauma.
Uh-oh. No, say it ain't
So
so.
So I moved into New York City. I was quite young, inexperienced, and I decided one night some friends were in town. I'm going to go to karaoke, like whatever. So we go to
In
karaoke
New York.
in New York, like whatever. It's karaoke, right? Like it's half a joke. So I noticed, I was looking at my watch. I'm like, this is starting really late. Like it didn't get started until like 11:30 at night.
Oh my.
And then the first couple singers came on. I'm like, oh, they're really good. Another one came on. Oh, they're really good. Then I'm like, and singing Sweet Caroline is Steve. Exactly. I was not very good. And it dawned on me as we were leaving the bar, the reason it started so late was that we were in the theater district and all of the
Oh
performers came off the
my
stages to
God.
go to karaoke, and I was the joke
Oh
that
my
night.
gosh.
So it's kind of awesome now in
It's
retrospect.
fabulous now. Yes.
But
I did have a brief. One of the things I would do doing karaoke, I love to do Elvis Presley songs.
oh, great.
Because if you're a guy doing Elvis songs, you're held to a very high standard. If you're a girl, not so much.
Yeah, I
Right?
could
Because
see
nobody
that.
expects you to do a great Elvis imitation. So I had this idea, and I actually briefly had registered a URL for it. I was going to put together an act. I have no idea what I was going to do with it, but I was going to call myself Diamond Elvis Jones and put together a set of Neil Diamond, Elvis Presley, and Tom Jones songs that I could do, because I figured it was roughly the same hair, same pants, and just change out the top. That was my theory about Diamond Elvis Jones. And I could
Sounds
get
like a
away with a
drag
lot
name.
because it's a female. I know. In hindsight, it really does, but it was, yeah.
So, take a look around your office
Okay.
and point out something that means a lot to you and describe it for me.
I have a lot of crap in my office, by the way.
That's okay. This is going to be audio, so they don't know that.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Shh.
So,
Your secret's safe with me.
yeah, there's a couple of things. So there's a red tag over here on the bulletin board or the pegboard behind my desk. And I don't know if you know what a red tag is, but when I got it, I did not know what it was. And it was the week before the convention center was supposed to open, and I was at a city department head meeting, and the inspections department head came up to me and said, "Hey, I need to talk with you after this meeting. I think we've got a problem. We're going to have to red tag the project." And I'm like, "Okay, Google, 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 what does that mean?" And what that meant was there's a major construction issue, and you can't open the building. And we were due to open the next week with 1,000 people at the mayor's State of the City address. So part of my brain is going, "Don't freak out, don't freak out, don't freak out." And the other part of my brain was going, "The mayor is not going to let this not happen. So I'm probably going to be okay." But that's what it really means. When they red tag a project, you cannot open. And what they told me was that something like all of the doors had been installed backwards, and that they were a life safety or fire safety issue, whatever it was some issue with every single door in the building. I was like, okay, well, we'll just, have the construction crew work overtime to put all the doors in, right? Like, I just didn't. So it means a lot to me because on the surface, I didn't freak out. although the duck was doing all that under the surface. It meant a lot to me as well because my counterpart at the inspections department at the time came up to me afterward, before the meeting after the meeting was supposed to start, and he said, "I'm really sorry, the city manager put me up to this." And it was all a joke. As it turned out, the city manager thought it would be funny. And it was kind of sweet in hindsight, just because I was one of the team. Like, this had been a we're a department, but we don't report to the city manager, so we're kind of this outside entity. And I've tried really hard since I've been in this role to ingrain myself with my department heads at the city, regardless of who I report to, that I be part of their team and they be part of my team. And through the construction project, It was very much that. If it was client facing, I made the decisions. If it was a construction issue, the head of the capital improvements department made the decisions. And if there was something that was budget related, he and I would talk through, what could we do that didn't disrupt the client facing but lived within the budget. So it was very much a team effort. And in a weird way, that felt that way to me. There's one other thing that's on my desk, and it's related to that too. When we first started this project, we have a unique entity in Irving called the Las Colinas Association, and they are kind of a hyper-powered property owners association that has control over commercial and residential property. So a homeowners association on steroids that have unique rights in the state of Texas that only happened once and will never happen again. They have aesthetic control over anything that gets built here. And when we first they fought us very hard. The leadership there fought us very hard on the first version of the convention center, and in hindsight, rightly so, which was a very generic box with docks with something, tall on the roof to make it stand out. And when we started the reboot and started the redesign and had drawings, I was like, I need to get this in front of this guy before he kills me. Post, and I took the drawings to him because it's out there. It's not a very typical looking building, and I was like, he can either be our savior or our killer. And he said he loved it. He said, but there's no way you're ever going to get this done. The city's going to find a way to screw this up. And so that became a little motivation. And so this note from him says, congratulations to you and good luck in your new digs. All the best. And we actually got an award from them for design.
Wow,
So,
very nice.
yeah.
And it is a
So I'm
really
very,
unique
very
looking
proud of that.
structure.
It's very different looking. Yeah. And I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it.
What advice would you have for somebody who's at that point in their career where they want to take more leadership responsibility?
I think depending on where they are in their personal life, like, does that mean a move or not a move? Is how can you take more responsibility where you are? When I talk with younger people, I talk about, your first job isn't going to be your last job, and it may not be your best job, but you should take everything out of it that you can. In terms of any learning opportunities that are thrown your way, you should never be afraid to do, the job two jobs below you on the org chart, as well as reaching to do the jobs above you. The more you can take on and be trusted to do, the more you will be safe if there's needs to reduce resources because you can do the job of three. And I also tell people if you're not finding fulfillment, if the day job is okay, but you're missing something, then plug your talents to refine them in a nonprofit that could use you. So, if somebody is, say, in an administrative support role, but have desires to do more creatively, want to learn how to become a blogger or a social media maven or whatever, go volunteer at the Humane Society or the Salvation Army, the local groups, and put your skills to work, put your passion skills to work, and hone them there. While you still do your day job and you still have those pesky things like food and shelter covered.
Pesky, yep.
But let your passion plug in somewhere else so that you are earning and building experience so that when you apply for something else internally or externally, doesn't matter what you got paid to be the social media coordinator for the Humane Society, right? It matters that you did it and you did it well. So what are the ways you can stretch? And then if you're more in a more senior role, hopefully your organization's leadership is invested in you and wants to see and help you grow. So make it clear to your boss, to your supervisor, that you want to grow. It doesn't mean I want to take your job. You don't have to say it that way, but I feel like there's more I can do here. How can we work together to grow my role? Like I always think it's a great compliment when an employee of mine gets stolen. That means we gave them the resource they needed to move on to the next chapter. We're a small organization. We don't have a lot of vertical room. We try to grow our people as much as we can, ideally through investing in training. And where we can grow, we try to. but it's not always going to be here, and it's okay. I think I'm more comfortable with people leaving than other people on my staff are, because it means starting over again, and I tend to look at starting over again as fresh eyes. Now, I'd also say, depending on where you are in your life and you're thinking you want more, again, like I said earlier, I've had to, for a million other reasons, sit there and go, what are the things that matter to me most right now in my life? And literally do the pros and cons kind of thing and say, you know, I had an excellent opportunity 3 months after this convention center opened. It was a dream opportunity, a bigger market, a place I loved, similar government structures. So my retirement pension could roll into it with very little effort. And I never would have thought in a million years I'd use that phrase. But I realized that was, I mean, so for me, it was like, oh my gosh, there's this confluence of all the right things for a change when an opportunity arose. And I went through the first interview and it was really good. And I realized as I got the email saying, hey, you made the next round, here's all the things we're going to need. And I realized how flippin' tired I was. We were 3 months after we'd opened this building after a 12-year Don Quixote run. And I was tired. And I give myself credit for realizing how exhausted I was. So I think you just have to think about all of those things, you know. It's are you what does it mean to start over, and do you need that recharge? What is it you're missing that's making you think you want something else? And is there, you know, if the good of staying where you are outweighs the bad of staying where you are, or the not as good, is there a way you can plug into something else that feeds your passion?
In one word, how would you like people to describe you, the people that you care about most?
There.
Here.
Here.
How do you make sure that you are present?
That's really hard for me to do. And it is something I will acknowledge that I've had to try and work really hard to do, especially personally, over the years. It's really easy in these jobs to be at work and on the clock 15 hours a day, especially if you also live in the community. And I live a little bit outside of Irving, and that has been a problem in the past. But from sunup to sundown, you're on people's radar. And it's the way with any civic servant role. You know, if you're at the grocery store, you're on. If you're at church, you're on. If you're putting gas in your car, you're on. At work, I try to be, and staff meetings are a perfect example. I try really hard to, if I feel the need to bring my phone with me, bring it, but not look at it. Write things, you know, bring a notepad and paper so that I am more present, so that I am not distracted. And, you know, certain of our staff, that's how they do their notes. You know, this is the recap I want to give in the meeting I've put in here. But I know that when I have my laptop in front of me or a phone in front of me, that I am going to multitask without realizing I'm doing it. Before we started this call today, I thought I made sure my Teams window was closed and my Outlook window were closed. I didn't. So I'm trying really hard not to look at this part of the screen so that I don't see those things telling me something's going on there, because unfortunately, that's how our brains have gotten wired. I have a friend who used to be one of our city attorneys, and she had a bracelet made of old buttons. It was on an elastic band. Now she used hers to help her bite her tongue. She would go into meetings and just go, and she would, you know, when she knew she was going to have one of those days, she wore the button bracelet so she could snap herself. And I, you know, I when I feel my mind drifting, and again, it's more during personal settings that I tend to drift than I do at work, but I try to do what I can to focus. And putting that stupid phone down is a big part of it. Being at lunch with a friend and not thinking about the picture we're going to take of our lunch together to post. Trying to be in the moment and trying to be there. When somebody comes into my office and needs to talk about a situation or a problem or whatever, trying to really listen and not think about what my response is going to be, but to listen. To listen for the questions behind the questions, or the fear behind the statement, or what's not being said. You know, sometimes that's the hardest part of the job is to figure out what's not being said, not what is being said.
Is there anything I didn't ask that you wish I did?
You know, I think the one of the other things we talked about the board, the progress we've made and things that give us pride, and I talked about the convention center. I think one of the other things that gives me pride and the team we've built here is part of that, and the fact that a lot of folks have chosen to stay. But I also think over time we've built a really good structure for our board to function as a board should function. Focused on board issues and big picture issues and advocacy issues, and letting the staff focus on the staff's work. And that has taken time. But that's, you know, using the board meetings and the board's committee meetings for the board's work, not for the staff's work. And sticking to that. And that's not been an easy thing to do. It's been easier as board members have changed over time. But, you know, really shifting the board into a role of what their job is. And their job is not sales and marketing of Irving.
It's more
Their
of a
job is
fiduciary,
managing me and
right?
making sure I'm doing my job. I'll take care of the staff. We don't have a sales and marketing committee of our board. That's not the board's job.
Is there anything you'd like to ask me?
How on earth did you end up doing this? How did you get from the Intrepid Museum
Where we
to
met and
doing this,
where we
where we
met
met
almost
100
20
years
years
ago?
ago.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
It's kind of
When we were
interesting.
both
So,
taller and blonder and in better shape.
absolutely. And this is a recording, this is audio. So, for all anybody knows, we both have abs.
Right. Yes, I do.
So,
I spell it with APPS.
I like that. So, I spent about 10 years, 10, 12 years working in development, sales, marketing, specifically on site with museums, restaurants, attractions, theater companies, in some ways, a little bit with destinations. And then I spent another 10 years consulting, mostly with destinations. I would show up in town, identify what product would appeal to travelers that maybe you're missing or your team hasn't noticed, help you bring that to market and really execute. You know, I would show up in town and notice there are fly fishermen every time we cross a bridge. Well, 3 weeks later, we can have an article in Condé Nast about it. But you had never thought of yourself as a
A fly
sportsman
fishing, right? Or sportsman,
community.
okay.
So I did that for about 10 years. In the middle of that, I realized that most of the training and education in the industry sucks. There's a lot of people who are asserting their expertise. There's a lot of people who are trying to sell something and claiming that it's education. And it's a lot of the same faces everywhere you go. You know, and back to that comment before, there's only so much knowledge in the room. And I am a lifelong learner. I am a nerd, first and foremost. You ask me what I love to learn. So about 7, 8 years ago, started beta testing some learning programs with the business psychologist and instructional designer by trade, Sheena Works. And we got to understand what the industry's real needs were. COVID hit. Well, when you're working with destinations and COVID hits, every contract is suspended, and understandably. And I decided to put my full-time effort into the Tourism Academy, you know, as a nonprofit. And it wasn't until I think last year, at Thanksgiving, sitting at the table, I realized that everybody in my family, except one, somehow worked in education.
Oh,
So there are
wow.
trainers for Fortune 500 companies, there's professors, there's administrators, there's, my dad is a janitor at a private school. So everybody works in education somehow. And it never dawned on me until
Yeah.
just recently. So, and what we've done here that's really exciting is we've identified what it takes to create meaningful training programs. They have to meet what we call a T criteria. They have to be transformative, they have to be engaging, and they have to be accessible. And accessible in two ways: accessible when, where, and how people need it. And that means different learning styles.
Right.
It means training that people can take when they have the free time. And I was talking about an online course that I'm taking right now, and they had a 40-minute video that was playing in the background while I did something else. If we ever put that into one of the programs that we teach, we're doing something wrong. The science tells us people check out after 4 minutes. So 4 minutes is our mark. If you can't deliver the message in 4 minutes, you got to break it up. So that's how I ended up here. And now, we're doing some really cool stuff. We have an online learning management system. So people can build and manage courses and have all the analytics and whatnot related to that. We have dozens of instructional designers all around the world who build and create training programs. We have speakers for conferences all over. I'm speaking in the Caribbean next week. I spoke in Bali not too long ago, was
Oh
with
my gosh,
Saudi
wow.
Arabia. Most of it's virtual. But still I go to conferences and whatnot. And we have sponsors that are happy, so life is good.
Yeah.
And I'm in a van.
And you're in a van, which is amazing. Where is your van today?
I am in Baja, Mexico, right outside of Cabo San Lucas,
Oh,
at a
very
lovely
nice.
little oasis in a canyon.
Okay.
It is a ranch. There is a burro. There are ranch dogs. There are the tree behind me is a fig
Yeah.
tree. And behind that are pomegranates, fresh pomegranates. So I
Oh.
can grab some pomegranates or some bananas off the tree and
Have you
have a
figured out
snack
the
on the way.
secret of getting pomegranates out of the pomegranate?
Yeah, you watch the YouTube video
Okay.
with a knife in your hand.
Pound it.
Exactly. If folks want to learn more about visiting Irving,
Visit Irving, Texas. Is our hashtag, and irvingtexas.com is our website, and various iterations of that on social. I did, only because you told me we were going to edit, I have two more things. One is personal about you, and one is something else I really wanted to talk about, which shame on me, I didn't.
So do you want to ask the personal one while we're still recording?
Yes.
Okay, the answer is yes, I did only once in college. We're trying to put it behind me.
I keep seeing glimpses of what looks like beautiful ink on your arm.
Oh,
And
yes.
I want to know the story. Oh, that is fabulous.
How do
What
I
is
turn my
it?
arm the other way? Oh, so it is a
It
bird being set free.
is. Now I can see it. Okay.
And it was inspired by Toni Morrison. And she wrote, "If you want to fly, you've got to give up the shit that weighs you down." So it is
Love that.
literally
A bird
letting
being
the
let
bird
free.
free.
It's beautiful. When did you get that?
I have had that one for probably 5 years. I had a tattoo artist that actually would come to my home
Little bit at a time.
And well, it's 20 something hours
Holy
over like
cow.
probably 3 or 4 sessions for that one. But it is a watercolor tattoo, which is really complex.
It's beautiful. It looks, I mean, I think
Thank
all
you.
ink is art, but it looks like a piece
Yeah.
of art has been transferred onto your arm. Yeah.
That was the goal. That was the goal. In my home, so I sold my house last year and I
Okay.
sold everything in it. The only things that I held on to, aside from my dog and what materials I needed to take a road trip, was some of the art. So I had a pretty good collection of contemporary art, or I'd say contemporary art. But the one type that I didn't have was a good watercolor. So I was
Okay.
looking and looking and looking for a watercolor, and I decided I would just get one tattooed on me.
I love that.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. And now I
Very
actually
cool.
paint watercolor. That's
Oh.
the one of those things that only four people know.
Okay, what is the first thing you painted?
A dog.
Your dog?
It was somebody else's dog.
Okay.
But then I
So
have
that you could paint
my
your
dog.
dog.
I could, and I have.
Okay. But you practiced on somebody else's dog first, which
And I
sounds
gave
like
it
a
to
really
them.
weird statement.
I won't
Strike
repeat that, but
that.
yeah, but no, I ended up giving them the portrait of their dog as a gift, so,
Neat.
and
Very
they have it on
special.
display in their home.
Yeah, very special.
Excellent. So the other one, do you want to ask on recording, or do you
No,
want
it
me to?
was you asked something else I wanted to talk about or something else I was proud of, and I would say the CDME program, Certified Destination Management Executive Program, as you were talking about education. That was a very important program to me to be part of in my, what I now understand were my formative years in this industry. But spending time the last 6 or 7 years to reinvent and kind of blow up and start semi over with that program in terms of how we deliver content, what the courses are going to be, why they're going to be what they are, rebuilding faculty, all of those things. Because for if you took it back when I did, which was 98, you had pretty much two or three people that taught everything. And that was, you know, they taught all the core courses and 20 electives. So depending on what you took, which wasn't a bad thing, they're all very, very knowledgeable, but we've been able to really move that from a very academically feeling program to very much more a applied theory kind of program,
Cool.
and kept of what made it academically strong, I feel like. But really, I think we've done a great job, and that's one of those things that just I love being involved with, but it gives so much back to me.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, to your point, if people want the academic education, they're going to go to the university. If they want skills that will help them do their job better and get to where they need to be, that's what training is for, and there's a significant difference, and I think that recognizing that difference is a huge milestone for most organizations. So, excellent. Well, thank you for joining me here on the
Thanks.
podcast. I appreciate
My
you and your
pleasure.
time, and I
Thank
look
you.
forward to seeing you in July.
In July, in our backyard, in one of our
Ex
suburbs.
exactly. All right.